You're listening to A Week in Wireless by telecoms.com, the podcast dedicated to everything and anything going on in the telecoms biz. On today's A Week in Wireless, we wrap up 5G world, we talk about VR and I make a humble apology, Spotify has a bite at Apple, and Snapchat claims that it's bigger than TV. All that and more on today's A Week in Wireless. Do you want to join the argument? Tweet us at telecoms. Hello and welcome to A Week in Wireless, the podcast brought to you by telecoms.com. Once again, my name is Tim Skinner and joining me today, as always, is Jamie Davis.
Hello, Tim.
And as always, again, is Scott Buceno.
Hello.
Lovely. Good start, guys. How are we doing then this week? What's been going on?
So I think the biggest thing for us this week in terms of the day job has been the 5G World event, which was down in Olympia. You and I were both there, Tim, and I was doing mainly TV interviews, which is all jolly good. And,
yeah,
and
how did they go?
Well, it enabled me to get a good sense of what the sort of word on the show floor is.
Right.
So 5G, obviously we've already covered it in previous podcasts. It's going to be a term that just keeps cropping up for the next decade,
unavoidably.
In this sector. But the interesting thing is where we are now. So we're obviously nowhere near actually using 5G. A lot of people only just moved on to 4G on their phones. So the talk is, what is 5G going to be, and what does it need to be? And indeed, are we that bothered? The marketing people are bothered because, you know, they've already sold their 4G stuff. They want to move it up. It's a bit like one guy I chatted to, a former colleague of mine, Phil Kendall, compared it to sort of FMCG marketing, like Gillette razors, where you got a Gillette razor that's got four blades, and they go, ha-ha, now we got one with five blades. Ah. And you're like, yeah, you thought it was good before. It's going to be so close, you'll only need to shave once a year with this. And of course, you know, a lot of that's just rubbish because how close can you shave? How much more can one blade do?
So in this case, then, it's we're giving you an extra G. We're giving you five whole Gs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A whole G. If only it was grand, eh? Anyway, so, yeah, joking aside, it came down to the talk about what 5G needs to be came down to, it sort of needs to be three things at once. It needs to be more, as we were just describing, but it needs to be an order of magnitude faster, like in excess of 1 gigabit per second download speeds, which is far more than most of us have got through our landlines, our fixed lines right now.
Yeah, actually, on that point, just to interrupt you there, I was in the keynote theatre in the morning and Huawei said that it did a trial where it managed to get 70 gigabits per second download speed. And I thought that's a bit much, isn't
it? Just silliness.
Yeah, we don't need that much. It's like having 70 blades on your razor. Need that much.
Well, you know what? And I mean, I do agree with you, but the history of technology is littered with people going, nah, we don't need any more. And then people always find a way of using more resource. But yes, I think, you know, most of us would be happy. Well, we'll be delighted with 70 megabits per second, let alone gigabits per second. So that's one. And then another one is sort of IoT, another big buzzword.
Of course.
You know, zillions of connected devices. They all need to be sort of self-powering or at least have like 10-year battery lives because you don't want to go back into them and be sticking in new batteries the whole time. So you need a kind of wireless technology that uses virtually no power, something like NB-IoT and there are other things. So that's string number two. And then a third one's emerging in the show, which is to do with low latency. And the main use cases for low latency are things like remote control. Ericsson was showing off this sort of remote surgery. They were actually doing remote surgery on people at the show, I hasten to add.
Dr. Robotic.
They were just talking about it in theory. But obviously, if you are going to sort of use remote control for surgery, A, you want to make sure that it's responding to your movements immediately, hence the low latency. And also, it offers things like haptic feedback, so you can mimic the sense of actually touching.
Okay.
Remotely. Yeah. And then the other one, which is going to provide a sort of handy segue into what I think you might be talking about from the show, is VR. If people are using virtual reality wirelessly, there can't be any latency there, because if there's a gap between, you know, what you see and what you do and it actually happening, then that completely ruins the whole effect.
It does. It doesn't just ruin the whole effect. It we'll come onto this in a bit more detail a bit later on, but any sort of delay between what your body thinks it's doing and what it's seeing is going to make you feel incredibly motion sick.
Yeah, exactly. So virtual reality would just consist of loads of people throwing up all over the place, which I don't think is what they're aiming for. So those are three things. And then the other one was, just as we're just alluding to at the start, you know, how how pressing is it that we have this order of magnitude higher performance than we have now?
Yeah.
My former colleague who I was speaking to said he was getting like, sort of, was it 70 megabits per second plus, something like that.
Yeah.
And that's plenty. People start talking, I think you heard, Tim, about, you know, someone saying, what if you wanted an 8K hologram streamed from your phone?
That was going to take me on to some of the use cases. And Jay, I'll loop you in for some of your thoughts on 5G use cases and some of the stuff that you've been seeing here. But one of the things that I saw at the show was a presentation by Korea Telecom. And we all know that the sort of Far Eastern operators, Far Eastern tech companies are really far ahead in this sort of stuff, mm-hmm. generally speaking, traditionally. And they were saying one of the use cases they saw was mobile streaming 8K holographic content, which is just ridiculous. I mean, he tried to demonstrate an 8K video, but was sort of ironically doing it on one of the sort of rather weak projectors that you see at these conferences.
There's no way near 8K.
Said, I don't even know why I'm bothering. but Jay, sort of some of the use cases that you've come across then. Shall I bring you in on this?
Yeah, well, I mean, one of the ones that I was sort of looking at today, and I think it was Ericsson and Vodafone did a good POC for it this morning, was sort of machine vision. And I think it's something that I'd never come across before, and I had to Google it myself.
Yeah. I'm looking a bit quizzically at you now. Yeah. So what is this then? What's machine vision?
It's just for quality assurance. Like, imagine you've got a production line, and instead of having, you know, Mr. Joe Blogs at the end of the line checking every product as it comes past, it's a computer that does it. And it's sort of taking it'll be faster, it'll be more accurate, but it's just for stuff like wood products, you know, checking the quality of wood or slates or the thickness of an ice cream wafer or something along those lines.
Undoubtedly the most fascinating concepts going on in 5G development at the moment.
But it's one of the biggest use cases.
Sure.
You know, and it's, the interesting thing that they said is, with 5G, it becomes a lot safer as well, because you can keep the data on site as well. You don't have to shift the data away from the sort of the point of collection. It can all be it's safer, and it opens up the idea for artificial intelligence there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Podcast favourite.
Well, always back to AI.
Let's not start down this all roads lead to apocalypse.
They're taking over, Tim.
No, not again. Not again. We've done this.
but VR, I think, is probably one of the most interesting ones anyway.
Yeah, no, certainly, yes, and we'll come on to that in a bit more detail.
Yeah, I was just going to, sorry to interrupt, I was just going to say, back to my, you know, how many blades you need on your razor analogy.
Uh-huh.
So there is, you know, with screens, people talk about like streaming 4K content onto a smartphone screen, but a 5-inch smartphone screen can't really accommodate 4K resolution
anyway.
So a lot of that is sort of a solution looking for a problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, one slightly more useful ones, these industrial ones that Jamie was talking about, that's more tangible and useful. And then there's the fact that where if wireless is starting to get as fast, if not faster than fixed, does it replace fixed? And that is an interesting concept, because if suddenly you've got this wireless connectivity in excess of what you need, you can do all this stuff backing up to the cloud, like Jamie was saying. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, the last mile from fibre to the home, you don't need to worry about laying fibre for expensively and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So those are some slightly more useful ones, not these sort of 8K holograms and that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. There's always going to be this kind of just headline-grabbing sort of ideas for 5G use cases. It's inevitable, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right. It's the one that gets everyone's attention, because it's the one everyone wants to talk about. You know, like I said, the machine vision may be one of the most widely used applications, but it's not really that exciting, is it?
No. but the whole point about use cases for 5G is something that I thought about quite a lot over the course of the show. So it opened up with these two keynotes from operators saying, yeah, we're doing all this fascinating stuff with the 5G at the moment, defer to the 8K mobile holographic streaming. But but then a bit of a reality check came along when the Nokia mobile CTO basically kind of suggested, all right, well, we've got the technology on the way, but everyone seems to be struggling to find sort of real applications. And we're getting there. Obviously, we can say things like, you know, we need to have IoT support, we need to be able to support 8K streaming, we need to be able to do this, that, and the other. But a lot of the technology for this stuff, IoT aside, for the things like this, the various sort of high-definition streaming, the technology is not even there yet, so we're kind of getting caught before the horse, I suppose. You know, we're talking about... I've barely even seen a 4K screen. I think I have when I've gone through John Lewis or House of Fraser or something. But, you know, not many people have them in their homes, let alone 8K, let alone 8K on a mobile device.
Well, quite.
You know, we're going to be quite some way away from that. I mean, anything else to note for you at 5G World this week?
I thought it was a really good show. There was a lot of buzz there, you know, considering how early we are in development of 5G. There's a lot of interest, but I think, you know, to follow on from what you were just saying, a lot of what people were telling me is this time it's much more demand driven. So with 3G, 4G, there was more of a philosophy of we'll build the technology and then work out what people need to use it for later. Now they're very much not building the technology until they know that there is the demand for it, whether it's from consumer or industry or whatever, which seems very sensible. And, you know, the industry's been burned a few times where it's spent a ton of money on buying spectrum and on infrastructure and then has struggled to recoup that outlay.
Yeah.
So I think they're just being a bit more pragmatic and perhaps a bit more cautious.
But on the flip side of that, how are you going to encourage innovation if you haven't got the tools to actually do it, if that makes sense? So, like, if you're saying, you know, make sure the horse is actually before the cart, you're always going to have that limitation. So unless you give them the freedom, you're never going to encourage that innovation beyond what we have or what the what the potential is.
Totally, no. To mix our metaphors a bit more, it's a bit of a chicken and egg thing.
And
ideally you want both happening concurrently. So maybe it is a bit of a game of chicken. Oh, this is getting better, these metaphors. Where people are they're saying, well, what do you want it for? And they're going, the other people are going, well, what can you do? And it's a bit of a standoff.
Yeah.
But you normally get there in the end.
Yeah, quite. One of the things that I did see at the show, moving discussion on sort of briefly to connected cars, there was a sort of a co-hosted event at 5G World focusing on connected cars, and I sat in on a couple of sessions. So I sat through one with the guy from Nissan, was going, connected cars are going to change the world.
Right.
We've got everything to be very excited about, and I'm sure he did not have the slightest bit of vested interest going on there. But then Jasper, the IoT firm, which was recently bought by Cisco, had a dude up there having a chat, and they were talking about sort of data allocation for cars and how they're going to get these things connected. But during both presentations about connected cars and this digital vehicular future, there was no mention once of the wireless telco, wireless carrier.
Right.
So me, as the journalist in the room, kind of sheepishly put my hand up and go, so what about that? And there was this general consensus that perhaps when 5G comes along, the dynamic between telcos and car manufacturers is going to change a little bit,
right,
to the point where they could potentially become sort of their own independent sort of MVNOs for their customers, where they're delivering data to their drivers, I suppose, their customers, in a sort of a monthly repayment thing, in the way that you pay for your car.
So you buy a car and with it comes a connectivity.
Exactly.
A service contract or whatever.
But I think there's still going to be a bit of debate and figuring out of these things. I was chatting to the CTO of Sprint the other day, and he was saying, you know, these things are still a couple of years ahead of us. We're going to be mulling over these business strategies for quite a while longer yet. Interesting times.
Cool.
Okay, so we're going to take a very quick break. We're going to come back and touch upon some VR, and I've got an apology to make, so stick with us.
The Global Telecoms Awards 2016 are now open for entry submissions, welcoming everyone from every part of the telecoms industry. Has your company achieved something great this year? Submit an entry and gain international recognition for your achievements. 22 categories cover almost everything in the telecoms industry, and the big winners will be announced at Black Tie Gala Dinner on the bank of the River Thames in London on the 2nd of November. To find out more and to submit your entry for the Global Telecoms Awards 2016, go to telecoms.com/awards.
Okay, welcome back to A Week in Wireless, the podcast brought to you by telecoms.com. Thanks very much indeed for sticking with us, listener. And let's start this part. I have a bit of humble pie to eat, I think, after comments a couple of weeks ago where I expressed my disbelief that virtual reality was taking off. And over at 5G World, the show we were just talking about this week, I had quite a perspective-changing experience, right. I suppose, as you'd say. Bit of an awakening for me. So previously I'd said, I can't see it taking off, it made me feel sick, it was gimmicky, all that sort of stuff. It didn't really have anything of appeal to me. But then I tried the HTC Vive.
Okay.
And I'm not paid to say this, by the way, just to make sure that we're crystal clear on that. But it was incredible. The experience was unbelievable. I mean, it was sort of broken down into four little mini games, and your plonks with the headset and your earphones on, the noise cancelling headphones, into a sort of 25 meter squared space, I suppose, where they have sensors at either end. So within your virtual reality world, it comes up with little cages, sort of visual cages, to show you that you're at the end of your area. And then I went through sort of four or five different mini games, ranging from bottom of the ocean, getting up close and personal with a blue whale that was getting up in my face. And then
I know.
If I could go one day without getting a blue whale up in my grill.
Blue whale hassle.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden being transported to another world where I'm fighting these flying bots trying to end my virtual existence.
Wow.
And, you know, beyond the couple of seconds where it's a little bit daunting getting that headset on and you realise that things are about to get real.
Yeah.
You then end up having this incredibly engaging, really, really fantastic sort of gaming experience, I suppose. So, yeah, sorry to everyone that I might have offended by saying VR's not going to take off, because I'm now a convert and I'm starting to beg my wife to get me a PlayStation VR for my birthday.
So your previous experience obviously had just been nowhere near as good as that.
No.
But, I mean, can you put your finger on what the major difference was? Was it just better, full stop?
Yeah, I think there was a couple of things. So we tried it at Mobile World Congress. I won't name the specific brand that I wasn't a fan of. But with that, it was quite laggy. It was all a bit all over the place. It was throwing things at you left, right and centre, so you felt a bit disoriented. I don't think the quality was quite there either, the sort of the visual quality, the definition of it all. And so it all just felt like a bit of a sort of bombardment of the senses, and you just didn't quite know how to sort of gather yourself. But yeah, playing on this HTC thing, it was just a bit of an eye-opener, really. It was really, really fun, really enjoyable, really immersive. I kind of forgot where I was when I was kind of playing it, and little did I know I had a photographer dancing around me, taking pictures of me playing this game. And there was me pulling some sort of Matrix-esque moves with my guns. So it's, in my opinion now, it's only going to really go from strength to strength as we get the processing power, as things like 5G come along to be able to enable that, as you mentioned earlier on, that ultra-low latency, so that there isn't this disconnect between what you're seeing and what you're moving and how these things will come together. And actually, I'll move on from eating my humble pie and talk a bit about a conversation I had with Sprint earlier this week. And they were talking about some VR trials they did with 5G. Uh-huh. So they went around the stadia hosting the Copa America tournament. And in their sort of car park areas, they were getting these sort of crazy setups going on where they got 5G going. And they were doing some VR trials. And my favourite quote was from the Sprint CTO. And he said, on VR... It was a raving success. Everything went great, and he said, "But we were worried that just a few nerds would show up, but everyone loved it."
Right.
And he said, "We got this real critical mass going on."
I guess you get that with new technology. You get that crossover from just nerds to, for want of a better term, regular people.
Yeah.
and maybe you're the personification of that.
Maybe I'm a pretty good hybrid.
Yeah,
nerd slash regular person. I think I'll pull it off with some grace.
I'm getting the impression from you though that you see it primarily as a gaming thing. Yeah.
But when I was chatting to this guy at Sprint, he was throwing a few, you know, possible services and use cases for virtual reality in it, and it isn't just about the gaming side of things. You can be using it for sort of meetings, education, for getting communities together in this virtual environment. And a whole bunch of other stuff. So we've got the principal gaming interest.
And there's
which a lot
Olympics
of people
thing
take.
That we saw this week, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. So, NBC in the States is planning on presenting, I think it's 85 hours of VR content through the Samsung Galaxy Gear, I think it is.
Yeah.
During the Rio Olympics this year, so there's a lot of that to look forward to. KT hailing back to the presentation that I saw at 5G World, they're talking a lot about VR content. So it isn't just the gaming side of things; it's the general sort of digital entertainment and also communications. So I even asked, could this be a new sort of video calling, HD video calling, VoIP, voltage, that sort of stuff,
video conferencing, that sort of thing,
but with VR? And he said, yeah, quite possibly. There's no reason why not. Yeah.
So what about you, Jamie? Are you won over now?
Do you want to live the dream? I was all right with it to start with,
you were
to
there.
Be honest.
You weren't a skeptic to start with.
I mean, you know, I'm still not convinced that it's going to be as big as everyone makes it out to me. I think it'll be big, but in terms of the sort of the numbers that I'm seeing thrown around, I think that everyone's getting a bit ahead of themselves. But in terms, like I said a couple of weeks ago, I can see it taking off in estate agents. You know, you view 20 houses through the VR headset, select the top five and go see them. Or, for instance, like Top Golf in central London.
Yeah.
You know, instead of hitting the ball into a projector screen,
why
not put the headset on and actually be at the golf course? You know, I think there's some great opportunities. But, yeah, mainly for gaming, but, you know, I can see it elsewhere as well.
Yeah, totally. But the point that you mentioned there about the stumbling block, price points, it's unavoidable. I mean,
100%.
You've got the lower end of the market, and by lower end, I mean the cheaper end of the market in terms of price, which was Samsung. They think it's $99 for their Galaxy Gear, and that's more of a quick plug-in for your phone.
Into that, haven't you?
Exactly, yeah. So it's always going to be a sort of a half step to VR from that perspective. But then I think the PlayStation VR, which is coming out later this year, which I've heard has already sold out in pre-order.
Right.
Although I think in the review I wrote of the HTC Vive, I think it said it's always difficult to know exactly how much is being sold in a pre-order. So for all we know, it could be three units they've sold.
Yeah.
And go, woohoo, we've sold out all of our stock. But then that's at market of $399.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense that it's £350 in the UK. I swear
we always get ripped off on that.
Does that include the controllers as well? Or
yes,
is it
that's the bundle. Yeah, that's the bundle.
Okay.
Some of the things that I read online suggest that the companion handsets that you get with the VR to actually allow you to engage in your virtual world, while with the HTC Vive is very, very smooth, very accurate, all that sort of stuff, the PlayStation controllers kind of lose it a little bit.
Oh,
because
really?
It's PlayStation Move, which is a several years old technology, which they brought out at the start of the PS4 era, and it's a little bit outdated, so you get a bit of latency, it's not quite accurate.
Okay.
And all that sort of stuff. But then if you move up, the further up the market, you've got the HTC Vive, which is priced at £689 for the headset, the sensors, and the hand controllers. And that's not including the graphics processor you need to run it, which comes up to £1,000 in cost.
That's right.
So if you were to build up this big VR system, you need to have a really powerful PC and the space to be able to do it. And so you're looking at a good couple of grand in total to be able to build everything together.
But that's where I was thinking, when you get to these sort of like VR cafes, I mean, that's where you can... You get some clever guy in Shoreditch or something like that that just decides he's gonna have instead of a cereal cafe, he's gonna have a VR cafe. And you know, he pumps 20 grand in, so you've got 20 headsets there.
Yeah.
And that's possibly a good way to get.
There's that, and you know, technology's always come down in price, so you've got the early adopter phase and mass market phase and all that.
Tell you what, I did see quite a cool short film not too long ago, which is taking this another step further. So you don't have a headset anymore; you can actually just plug yourself straight into the game, and then it's kind of Matrix style, takes you off to another world, and then it actually comes into this kind of dystopian future where everyone's basically sort of heroin addicts, but for gaming.
Yeah.
So they just completely disassociate themselves from the real world in which they live, and end up getting completely lost in this virtual world from which they can't disconnect.
Wasn't there that documentary series a couple of years ago? I think it's Black Mirror.
Oh, yeah.
And they did it's a very dark, dark series, to be honest. But it's quite entertaining. I think they did one along the same lines.
Well, I'll tell you who else has done it is, you know, the TV comedy Red Dwarf.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they covered it in the TV comedy, but if you actually read the books, which I recommend, they're really funny books.
Oh, yeah.
They go much more deeply into this. They call it Better Than Life.
Right.
And it's this utopian thing where you put these electrodes into your brain. So it's ultimate virtual reality. But what you're actually playing out is your utopian, your ideal life.
Okay.
And it's, you know, it's quite, it's really cleverly written, because some people, like Lister, just has a really nice quiet life in a sort of replica of the town from It's a Wonderful Life, the 50s film. And then you've got other people with slightly more disturbed subconscious, like Rimmer, who's right. just got all this weird stuff going on. Cat lives in a massive castle with a moat full of milk and all that sort of thing. So yeah, there's all sorts of fun you can have with that stuff.
Yeah, well, my wife mentioned to me the other day, we were chatting about this whole VR stuff, and she grew up in a household that enjoyed watching Star Trek, and she said that they had
the holodeck.
I think so. It's instead of having it in a headset which you equip, you enter a room which is completely altered.
Oh, yeah.
I like those episodes, they were cool.
Yeah. So, moving on a little bit, but still segueing nicely in there. So, Android has released, or Google's released, Android N.
Mm-hmm.
Which
we knew it was going to be N for a while, but they've given it the name.
Yeah, and it is Nougat. Nougat. How do you pronounce that?
Nougat. I think it's Nougat.
Yeah, okay.
I think it's French.
Mm. Which we called that.
We said that.
Yeah, we said that it'd be Nougat. And that's got Daydream VR, Google's virtual reality platform, baked into the OS.
Yeah. So, in other words, if you want to develop VR stuff now, you don't need to worry about plugins or extra little downloads. Mm. It's just there from anything that's got Android N onwards. Mm. I've got no idea what O's going to be. Nougat. I think we arrived at Nougat because we couldn't think of much else. Could we Nutella?
Nutella was the other one.
Yeah.
I saw a good tweet the other day saying they couldn't call it Android Nutella because it sounds too much like Satya Nadella.
Okay, who's the Microsoft guy?
CEO.
So, I'm going for Terry's chocolate orange.
Yeah. The Oreo was a good one.
I think
Oreo seems more likely.
Terry's chocolate orange. I think that's a massive cheat as well.
It's a bit of a leap, isn't it?
You could do everything. Like, I don't know, like orange squash or.
So, have you got a better one then?
No, not in the slightest.
Not better than Oreo, no.
Oreo's the more sensible
Oreo
choice.
Oreo seems likely, but I'm sure they'll have licensing stuff they got.
Yeah, but they did that with Kit Kat.
All right, let's keep going. Let's not drain it too much, but you can go peanut butter.
Peanut butter, yeah.
Popsicle.
Pop-Tarts.
Yeah. Pop-Tarts is a good one. Yeah, I like that. Rocky Road.
Rolos. Love a Rolo.
Yes. Nice, yeah. Who would you give your last Rolo to, Jay?
I'm not giving it away.
This is a career decision you're making here, Jay.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, let's open up to the listeners as well. If you've got any suggestions for future Android games, then send them in to us at Telecoms. So let's leave VR and stuff like that behind now then, and just move on to our kind of, you know, various little tidbits of news that we've seen this week.
What's been going on in the world?
Well, it would be impossible for us to do a podcast with all the stuff that's been going on here recently without mentioning Brexit.
The B word.
It's been, I know.
That's been a pretty crazy week over in the UK. For anyone listening outside of the UK, no one really expected us to vote to go out of Europe.
No.
And everyone went kind of mental once the vote happened.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, leaving aside, we're not going to get into the deep, dark politics of it here. That's not what this podcast is about. But it's just made everyone engaged. It's made everyone talk about it.
I think it's made everyone panic.
Well, as well.
We've just seen everything go crazy the last week or so.
And then we've had all the politicians go crazy as well.
Well, that's what I mean. Yeah, really, so really true.
Everyone in Labour hates each other. Everyone in the Tories hate each other. Yeah. No one really cares about Lib Dems. But they probably hate each other as well.
Yeah. Should we touch briefly upon whether that's going to have any sort of knock-on effects for telcos, telecoms?
Jamie, you were having a little look at this, weren't you?
Yeah, I had a bit of a dig around. And, I mean, this doesn't really impact us in the UK as much as it impacts people in the EU.
Mm. On the telco side?
Yeah, on the telco side, if we're actually going to leave. I think it's telco sort of technology full stop. But I think from what I've been reading, the UK is a voice for a bit more standoffish regulation.
Yeah.
Whereas you get the French and the Germans, which are much more, let's more heavily regulate the markets. Now, one of the big issues we've been coming across over the last sort of couple of months is safe harbor, data transmission across the Atlantic. Now, the reason it hasn't been sorted out is that they haven't come to any middle ground. If you take away the lighter voice of the UK, the difference between the US and EU just gets further and further away.
Mm.
So Right. I mean, I don't know what the resolution is there. I can't, you know, if that gap is getting wider and wider, you know, there's not going to be a resolution in the near future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, we'll move on from Brexit, but we will touch upon something we saw last week. We joked about the Icelandic football commentator.
The other Brexit.
Last week. Yeah, the other Brexit. So we'll avoid the two Brexits in a week.
It's not Brexit there, because Wales are still in the Euros.
That's a very good point.
Let's see how that one goes. but he's back. He's on another one. He's on another screamer. And this time he allegedly shouted, "England wanted to leave Europe, and now you have."
Well, so, fair point.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah.
I've forgotten his name, but he's just a classic bloke, that Icelandic commentator.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So that's Brexit, and Snapchat says it's now bigger than TV. Apparently, it's more popular than TV.
Right.
Yeah, producer Brad shakes his head in disgust. Yeah, and nods agreeingly. Yeah, it says that it now has more than 10 billion video views a day, which is apparently 350% year-on-year growth, which amounts in advertising revenue to $300 million. While that's nothing really compared to its sort of mobile advertising on Facebook, which I think accounts for something like 1.5 billion of its global annual revenues. But that's growing, and it's growing fast. And that's quite impressive.
I still don't get it.
You don't get Snapchat.
I still don't get it.
By Snapchat's own words, that means you're too old for it.
I mean, at the same time, it's just I look at it and it's like, wow, you're sending pictures to each other. Yeah, I can.
We got a couple of colleagues who sit near us in the office, and all they do is they use those filters to sort of superimpose, I don't know, animal faces or whatever. Which is fine, but the novelty will wear off after a while.
They had a bit of an own goal when they put a Bob Marley filter on, didn't they?
Oh yeah, and
you can make yourself look like Bob Marley.
Caused a bit of controversy, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's like Tay kicking off all over again. Okay, in other news then, Spotify has had a bit of a bite at Apple. see what I did there? Uh-huh. Saying that Apple has basically tried to block its latest iOS update.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Spotify...
Why would it do that?
Well, I have no idea. I'm sure it has nothing to do with Apple's own music service.
Right.
But Spotify basically says that this is anti-competitive, and it's written a very strongly worded letter to Apple's general counsel. So that'd be a close one to watch. Apple, meanwhile, is reportedly looking to buy its way into the music streaming service. It's got Apple Music, but it's not quite taken off as strongly as I think it would have hoped. So it's looking to acquire Jay-Z's music streaming label called Tidal.
Reportedly. Mm-hmm.
Yes, allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah.
And that's got something in the region of 4.2 million paying subs, so it'd be a decent little chunk. Spotify still leads the way, though. I think they've got 30 million global paying subs and then 70 million free subs.
Well, it's really hard. From a telecoms point of view, we refer to all these sort of internet things that are consumed on smartphones as OTT sort of services. And in my experience, it's been really tough when one company's really good at a certain thing, like Facebook's really good at social, Spotify's really good at music streaming, Google's really good at search and so on.
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard for any of them to break into each other's space when it's properly owned.
Yeah.
So Apple, you know, very accomplished company though it is, has still got its work cut out there.
Yeah, quite. Okay, so final little moment of the week. We talked about AI last week and how it's going to destroy the world. We mentioned it again in a blind panic about 20 minutes ago.
You mark my words, it'll happen.
But I tell you, no, AI is not all bad. We've got reasonable proof now that says that AI works for the betterment of humanity, and that a chatbot AI lawyer created by a very clever 19-year-old, that makes me feel sick, has managed to create an AI application or an online assistant that has overturned 160,000 parking tickets in London and New York, saving over $4 million of fines.
Wow.
How about that?
And so it's all just automated, yeah? All AI.
Yeah, yeah. It basically gets the user to input a couple of questions, you know, was the sort of parking rules reasonably signposted and things like that? Were they made sufficiently aware?
And then it
collates all that information, sends it on to the relevant authority locally, and has successfully turned over $4 million.
I'll take it all back then. AI is great. We've got nothing to worry about.
Yeah. Cool. So I think that pretty much wraps everything up in a neat little bow for this week. So thanks very much for sticking with us, listener. You've been listening to A Week in Wireless, the podcast brought to you by telecoms.com. And share us your thoughts. If you've got anything that has come up during this week that you want to share with us, if it's funny, if it's factual, if it's neither, then send it over either way. At telecoms, using the hashtag AWIW for A Week in Wireless. So that's it from me, Tim Skinner. Say goodbye, Jamie Davis.
Thanks, Tim.
And say goodbye, Scott Buccino.
Goodbye.
See you later, gang. Thanks very much for joining us. This has been A Week in Wireless, the podcast brought to you by telecoms.com, covering everything and anything in the telecoms industry. If you want to join the argument, tweet us at telecoms. Share your thoughts. We'll see you again next week, same place, same time, same people, but even better.